Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast hangout. We are again, also with Artur Sosins from Latvia that has been surviving the early weeks of his newborn son. How are you doing, Artur?
Very tired, very sleepy, but also very excited.
Okay, that's good to know, because we also have several interesting topics about things going on in the JavaScript world that we are going to start commenting right away. The first topic is about something that I didn't think that would get much attention, but now with more and more browsers deprecating Flash, this simple solution just got to be very important and got a great attention, which is a solution for copying text from clipboard. Previously, we used to use some Flash snippet because some way a Flash snippet could access the clipboard, while in JavaScript it couldn't.
Couldn't. There was no standard way to access the clipboard.
Yeah. So this simple library. Just got the attention because if Flash is not dead, it's dying. And the more people stay away from Flash, the better. So this snippet that was developed by Zeno Rocha got the attention. Well, I didn't look into it. I don't know what exactly it does. Is it a wrapper for different browsers to access the clipboard? Or did you look at it, Artur?
Yeah, I'm looking actually right now. And yeah, it uses different vendor-specific and standardized selection APIs, and also the same for clipboard access. So it would work mostly only in newer browsers. It would not work in older ones because it uses the new API. But still, yeah, it's usable. And I think most of the users are upgraded to some extent. And based on what support of browsers you need, you could use it. And as a fallback, as they say, that they at least select the text. And on error, you can provide the message like, text is selected, just press Control plus C or something like that to copy it, if they can't copy it through clipboard themselves.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I never got right, it was why it was not possible to copy text, select text in the past with JavaScript, because actually, I developed an editor library many years ago to implement what you see is what you get editor, and it would use the exec command, and for copying it wouldn't work. Do you recall what was the reasoning for not working by then?
I think most of it were security issues. Because I think many users used to copy their passwords in the fields instead of typing them. So if you could create the library that simply waits for something to be copied and send it to server, most likely you would get lots of passwords from website or something like that. I think that was at least the concern. But now with modern auto-form viewers and other stuff, I don't think anyone ever copies a password anymore.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but so although the do it solve it in the current browsers, is it this selection object or something?
Yeah,
I see. Well, anyway, well, for whoever wants to implement a modern solution for copying text, this is the solution that you can use. And let me just select the window here. So moving on with the next topic, let's comment on an article by Jeff Atwood, which was one of the founders of Stack Overflow. He wrote an article about the state of JavaScript on Android in 2015 is poor. Well, poor when compared with JavaScript on iOS. Basically, it says the fastest mobile phone, which he refers to Samsung Galaxy S6, would run some benchmark at 400 milliseconds while running it on the latest iPhones and the iPad. It would run much faster. Well, I don't know if this is a good reference. I'm not sure what is the benchmark script that they are trying to evaluate the performance. I don't know. Well, it's something that it usually does not concern me, but because I'm not comparing, I don't even have an iPhone to start comparing. I don't
see. You have an Android.
Yes, but I don't look much at how fast JavaScript is running on mobiles, because when you access, for instance, a page, you have evaluate the whole experience, not just JavaScript by itself. So if a page is slow, we don't know if it is JavaScript or some other aspect of the way the page is being loaded, like images or other libraries or
true, but with current trend of transcompiling everything from C into JavaScript, you can compile quite a massive libraries to convert videos, and as we commented in many podcasts, so if you want to perform such task on a device that poorly runs JavaScript, then it'd be a very long task to complete.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe there is a reason for this. I don't know if the article suggests any reason. I could not notice anything. But okay, now that Google has probably paid attention to this, they probably we'll look into that and see what they can do. There are some charts here that I'm not sure what they mean. Because they mentioned Kraken and then Google Octane V2.
That those are probably browser things to test.
Or could be JavaScript engines that are used on.
Yeah,
on the mobile phones. Well, anyway, this is something interesting, as probably we'll see some reaction from Google in the near future, and or not, I don't know. Okay, so moving on to the next topic, we have actually several articles that get back again to the nice things that we can get when finally JavaScript has the await, async and await constructs as a widely implemented solution for running asynchronous code. First, there is this article in the Microsoft MSDN site, and it shows how things are used to be done without using a sync and await.
Promising await.
It talks also about promises. For me, promise is just a way to structure your code differently, but the pain is there, it's still there. And finally, below, they talk about how it will look like when async and await will be available. And yeah. I was trying to.
This is a great example, actually. You can see how the same code changes into smaller and smaller with every new iteration. First, we're using callbacks, then promises, and lastly, await keyword becomes really more compact and more readable. Probably, await keyword would not be usable everywhere because it's basically. I don't know, does it really stop the execution until the callback completes, right? So
it doesn't stop the execution. It's, the way I understand this, the await will resume when the function is done, when it returns. I think returning in this context is probably calling a promise or something like that. I'm not sure about how it works, but
So just more a syntactical thing to be easier to.
Well, in reality, for instance, here, this code below the white line will only run when this function finally is done. So it's different than having to put some promises or some callbacks here.
Yes, of course.
And internally, how this happens is that all these asynchronous languages have something called the event loop. In the event loop, it is like polling different sections of code that is being run asynchronously to see if it is done, if it is ready. And if it is ready, it can do something, move on to another asynchronous code. So if it is not ready, like for instance, if you call this function, and it is waiting for something asynchronous to finish, it will move on to another thing that is in a sort of a queue of asynchronous things to be executed.
Yeah, so if you have something inside timeout or sent interval, it still will be executing while waiting for the callback.
Yes, maybe not necessarily set timeout.
Just as an example, because it's something that runs in parallel with.
Yeah. Because set timeout will actually would not do anything except checking if the time has passed. Now for other more complex operations, like for instance, let's see if the server responded to an AJAX request. It will do that inside the event loop, and when it is done. Somehow, the engine will flag that it can resume to something else. In this case, it's to move on to the next statement. So there is some integration with a JavaScript execution engine to sort of suspend the state of execution of this section of code, and then resume it when this is done. That's the way I understand it. Well,
interacting, it would allow us to implement lots of new patterns. One thing that I wanted to mention that get JSON async function in this case would still need to return a promise because await only works with promises, right?
I think yes, because it has to return something, and I think the return value is probably a promise because. or not, I don't know, because if you look here, you see that it calls parse.json with the result. So I think it will actually return some value, which in this case will be a JSON string.
Promise probably would get some value or something like
that. Yeah, I think using promises was the proposed solution before. So, okay. But this is ECMAScript 7, I think it will be different.
How would you go about if you have a bunch of functions which you want to execute asynchronously and only execute some NESC task after all of them complete? A wait keyword wouldn't really help you in that case.
Well, I don't know. This is something that is already inside a function that was declared to be async. So by the time that you execute async, this is sort of starting a thread, a parallel thread.
Yeah.
It is not a parallel thread because it will not create its own context. If there is a really blocking function in the middle, it will block everything, not just the current section of code.
Yeah, because JavaScript is single-threaded in its own.
Yeah, the runtime hinges to be single-threaded. So I think this async function, we will like put this in a sort of a queue of things that have to be executed when the CPU is available for executing this code. But I think you can have multiple asynchronous sections being run in parallel. Okay. And the event loop manager will decide when it's time to run each of the things. That's the way I got it, you know. I'm still not certain because this is a bit magic. It doesn't really matter. What matters is that it is available. But this, as we mentioned before, this is the same solution that is being implemented by the Facebook ECK language, which is a sort of an evolution of PHP with the async and await keywords, so they have the same keywords. And as we mentioned also in the PHP podcast, they are also thinking of having something like that in PHP, but it will be complicated. I don't know, because it requires messing up with lots of parts of the PHP engine. But if PHP does not have it, it will be delayed when compared to other languages. So I think for the survival of the popularity of PHP, it is important. Anyway, here we are talking about ECMAScript 7. So it will still be some time until this is available in all browsers. Meanwhile, I found other articles also talking about the sync and the await keywords. Again, talking about how good it will be. Finally,
I see the excitement in everyone's
blogs. Yeah, all this is something for the future. Everybody is excited, and. They are saying that eventually you can already implement this using Babel. I'm not sure. Did you try Babel or?
Yeah, well, I think we commented a couple of podcasts ago about it.
Yeah. But are you using it regularly or no?
No, not yet.
Just your colleagues.
But it basically, as this article said, that you can do also async and await in the Babel. So if you want to experiment with them and play with them, you can do it.
Well, if they can use a transpiler to make it run on, at least, would it run in ECMAScript 5? I don't know. You have no idea.
No.
Well, they probably do something like emulating an event loop that will take care of this management of what portions of the section to run. It's probably something very interesting to study, probably a hack, I don't know. And there is also another article here telling that Microsoft has already enabled a sync and await in the Edge preview build. Edge, it's the code name for Internet Explorer 10. They're just trying to get rid of the bad name.
Yeah, and they're trying to win the developers back with enabling early features like async and await, so it might be working.
I don't know. I don't know what is in their minds anyway. I think this is interesting because it will push forward the other implementations of JavaScript to implement this and not wait for future releases. We'll talk a lot about async and await, so let's move on to another topic. So the next topic is related with, if I can push the screen share button, it will help. Engine script, which is basically a JavaScript implementation developed by the Nginx project. And basically they have developed their own JavaScript implementation rather than relying on some other engine that exists. It seems that they use it mostly to parse configuration, right?
Yeah, so basically instead of simply having configuration, you can have a little more complex setup without parsing, adding, rerouting stuff by providing some JavaScripts, but it's not a server-side script like Node.js. It's just to do some configuration and more advanced works specifically for an Nginx server.
Yeah. Well, this is interesting because they say that they would not use some other implementation because they have more control over it.
And, for example, there is a MongoDB database, and MongoDB also uses JavaScript to run some more complex queries and applications and stuff that you want to do. So it's simple, a new appliance for JavaScript in some specific case.
Well, they certainly have their own reasons. They also mentioned the fact that they will use JavaScript just to run small configuration scripts, and that's it. And so they don't need things like garbage collection or anything
or
more complex.
Or anything, not a regular JavaScript, just a small subset of it for what they want need.
Yeah, this is just interesting. Just another example that JavaScript is everywhere.
Yeah, it's interesting because they could go with any language they would want, with using Lua or using some their own domain specific language or anything. But it just shows that JavaScript has something to it, so that they would better took it, adapt it, and use it rather than using something else.
Yes, that's true. Well, moving on with the next topic, now talking about an approach for splitting long-running tasks so they do not hang. So there is this library. It says an ECMAScript 6 developed functional API that prevents long-running scripts from blocking a JavaScript thread. So if you have some CPU-intensive code, that you need to run with Chunkify, you can sort of have split the execution, so I think by the end of each chunk, it will release the CPU at least for a while. So any other any other task that needs the CPU will be given a chance to use the CPU. And they have several functions in this library, like using generators. The each is an iterator, I think. A map reduce, they also have an implementation, because these are operations that cannot, that can apply on large arrays. Interval, I'm not sure it will be. Oh, it's still dealing with arrays, right?
You could see an example here. So there is some animation, the circle is jumping here and there, and by hovering the button, they perform some kind of calculations on the background, like map, reduce, each range, and animation is still running normally without being interrupted. But if we disable Chunkify and try to run some operations, probably my computer is too, oh yeah, I can see the stutter anyway, but the idea is that it really helps to, it seems to really help to the main event loop is not so cloaked, and the animation still keeps running normally if Chunkified enabled and those operations are performed with Chunkified.
Well, I'm not sure. Oh, can I test this? Oh, it's running a map operation while running the animation.
Yeah.
I can sense that my computer fan is accelerating, as in it's sucking a lot of CPU, but it is done. So if I remove the Chunkify and run the map operation, it will simply stop the animation because it is not giving enough CPU for the...
Exactly.
This is just a way to be fair with parallel tasks that may be running on the same thread. Right. So when it ends, it will just release the CPU for whoever wants to. I mean, whatever task needs to do. In this case, it would be the animation. And okay, so let's move on with another topic. I don't know, I'm going to take it here so it doesn't suck my CPU doing a silly animation.
Sure. I also closed it.
Yeah, so moving on with the next topic. In this case, it's just to mention, I think we already mentioned this in the past, but now it seems to be official.
We mentioned in the past that Google can... probably I'm jumping ahead of topic, but we all know that Google can run JavaScript to render page as you want, as you intended it to, because they can even check if it's mobile friendly, if it scales and stuff like that, so they can run everything and render everything and know everything. And now it's a logical step that previously there were some ways to allow Google to index your web page when you're using AJAX requests through some schemes, like replacing your hashtags with escaped fragment, and then you would present that content to them and stuff like that. Very complicated and stuff. And now they seem to be able to do it just on their own without any help needed from...
Yeah, because the previous scheme it was sort of complicated, because you have to create artificial pages that take some parameters, and you have to have more work to make the service generate those pages, when in reality the pages are generated on the browser side with a regular JavaScript execution. Could be loading some excerpts in the page with the AJAX, or something that updates the page with some other information not necessary from AJAX. So
and currently you can simply use the API HTML API for push states histories. And what is interesting is, Google can render a web page, they can execute JavaScript, and they can do everything they like. What about other search engines? What about Yahoo, Bing?
Yeah. Well, the question, it's what is the share of those search engines? Is it relevant for your market?
Is it relevant for your market?
Unfortunately, no, because Google, it's like 90% of or more. But they say that in the United States, the share of Bing and the Yahoo is much higher. So if you have sites specific for United States, you probably have more people using other search engines, especially now that Firefox sort of actually they signed a deal with, was it Yahoo this time? I'm not sure, but I think it was Yahoo. And the matter here is that basically if you are using escape fragments, never mind. When they said deprecating this, don't bother implementing this, because they will not be caring anymore about those pages. I don't know if they will index every page with that has a hash in the front. I don't know how this will work. And it probably will be interesting to see if there is any follow-up, because when they say deprecation, it doesn't mean that they stop caring about what you did in the past to make certain page fragments indexable. Okay, moving on with the next topic. There is an article, I don't know if this is probably premature to know, to talk about, because it is again about WebAssembly, which is something that has been defined, I think. So there is an article called Seven Things About You Need to Know About WebAssembly.
That is actually the best article about WebAssembly that I have found. It answered almost all questions I had about WebAssembly, and including what WebAssembly actually is. So it's interpreted to be as a bytecode for browsers. So the main idea is that you can develop something in any language and environment that you want that would be then compiled into WebAssembly and could be run by a browser.
Yeah,
so it's not JavaScript only to create some libraries for a browser or games or anything. Yes. You can create in every language that could be compiled to WebAssembly.
So to whom is this interesting? To developers of other languages?
Yeah, basically if you don't like JavaScript and like something other, like C++, you could probably develop something there and put it in WebAssembly. Yeah, well, there are also other usages, as many of users using Emscripten, and it probably be a much easier way to achieve the same. There were also other use cases mentioned, like some functionalities not really supported, but could be introduced.
Right, so they mentioned the first fact is that WebAssembly is not the end of JavaScript, like as if whoever has JavaScript code is not going to migrate to some other language just because you have WebAssembly.
Yeah, of course.
Also, because it's not yet something available. WebAssembly is being developed by the teams behind ASM. JS and
Portable National Client.
Native clients, right?
Native, yeah. So basically, it's a Mozilla Foundation and Google working together.
Yeah. This, I think this can be interesting for those that want to sort protect the JavaScript of their pages, because they, when they compile it into WebAssembly, it will be sort of unreadable. Or
yeah,
even if you can disassemble it, you probably cannot do much with it.
Without the source maps, you can't really understand much, probably.
WebAssembly is backwards compatible. What do you mean?
Well, they have a polyfill or some kind of a plugin. Basically, if you are familiar with Unity Web Player, then it will be backwards compatible. Would be something like that, that you install an external plugin and would be able to run with WebAssembly in other browsers.
Yeah. So it will still run. WebAssembly does not look like CPU assembly. Okay, that's it looks more like bytecode.
compiled probably, but yeah, you can see examples.
Yeah, there's some example here of WebAssembly statements. For me, this is a JavaScript dialect.
Yeah, of course, they would need to be in JavaScript to be run in browser, I think.
Yeah, so that's how they will implement it, backwards compatible with some wrapper library, probably, I think. And again, WebAssembly will extend beyond the features required by JavaScript. So
yeah, what they want to say is that it would improve lots of stuff, like I think that was mentioned.
Things that are not used in JavaScript.
No, I mean, it's like loading time and parsing time would be much faster for WebAssembly than for JavaScript code.
Okay. Well, I think it's great. And
as you see, there are also features like it would have the full threading support and zero cost exceptions, coroutines and stuff like that. So,
well, basically, it will be another JavaScript-like language.
Yeah.
Just meant to be to run faster, because it seems to have types that have a specific byte width.
Yeah,
so bit width, I mean, so and they have functions specific for those types. So if you need a small integer, you will not use a large integer. Just
but that's exactly what AwesomeJS is doing also. It's all the base of optimization.
And okay, moving on, source maps will allow you to easily debug and compile code. Yeah, what are source maps?
Do you remember we had an article about Uglify, which minifies the file, but then you want to debug it, then you have to provide the source map, so it maps variable name, function name, and stuff.
I remember. So it is the original source.
Yeah.
So you can single step the original source while executing the
compiled version.
The compiled version. Okay. You do not need to wait for WebAssembly to be ready.
Yeah, well, that basically means that you can jump on AwesomeJS and native clients right now, because they would be based on WebAssembly would be based on this technology either way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is interesting because it, as you said, this clarifies certain doubts of what WebAssembly will be and how good it will be or not, depending on the point of view. So moving on to the next topic, I wanted to mention this library called LJSON, which is basically the regular JSON, but it now supports one type, which is some executable function.
Yeah, so that was really interesting.
There. Sorry. Meanwhile, okay. Let me increase the font if possible. Here we have a JSON object, and one of the elements is actually a function. I don't know if this is a good idea because, well, I don't know also what are the restrictions on the syntax. Maybe it's a function declaration that will never execute unless you want to.
Yeah, probably also not supported for native functions, only for user-defined browser-defined functions.
Or at least maybe it will not execute anything when you load it, when you pump it.
Of course not. You probably have to evaluate it, I think, to run it.
Yes, in this case, yes. But imagine if this mail function is like a dog, something that sends your cookies to the to some
I understand
hacker,
the
hacker server.
Of course, yeah, it could not be some arbitrary user entered function.
Yeah, it probably needs to be a closure declaration, I think.
Yeah, but as you know, today we learned in PHP podcast that we can archive files with JSON, so why not provide JSON for functions?
Yes, that's the idea here. And I don't know what is the in this case it's very dumb the example, because it will return if you access this value here, it will return an object, so it could well be replaced by another object rather than returning it. I suppose this more complicated case would do some evaluation. I don't know what are the restrictions. And the author also mentioned there is a port of this library to PHP.
Mm.
So if you want to have something like this in PHP, I'm not remembering any use case on by which this would be interesting, but okay. Maybe it has some uses that are not obvious to me. Any uses that you can remember?
Well, from the same article that you showed, there was one use case defined that, do you remember, there was a game where you learn to code by writing functions to do something with characters?
Yeah.
Well, so you could use it for something like that to write a function, then JSONize it, send it to server and execute or something like that. Of course, you would need to have a more control over it of what it does and stuff like that.
Yes, that's why I think this is just for clear closure definitions. You cannot put some arbitrary code in there. Well, I don't know. I have to see an example in practice. Okay. Now, moving on to one last topic, which is about Node.js that is now in version 5.0.0. Is it my impression or they are moving too fast with the versions? I think they have a new major version every month.
Yeah, there was a huge stagnation in Node.js, and that's why they separated to IO.js, which had much more versions and progression, and now they have merged back, so I think some of the trend from releasing lots of versions from IO.js have now moved on to the Node.js, and it's happening. They are releasing faster versions than we can try off.
And if you look at the change log, you see a lot of bug fixes and the breaking. I suppose breaking means backwards incompatible changes, right?
Yes, there are actually too many of them, as I see. But after reading through them, they are breaking compatible changes in some cases that which I have not used any of them. So for me, I think nothing of that would break a backwards compatibility. But yeah, in some cases it will. If you are using,
This probably will lead for people that do not. pay attention so much to each new version, because if they break many things every month, if you're trying to catch up with what are the changes, next month it will be different. And oh well, it could be hard.
You can say similar thing is happening with PHP, and that could be also one of the reason of PHP adoption is quite slow. Probably in Node.js it would be similar.
Well, I don't know, because the last major version of PHP is like 10 years ago, I think. Was it like PHP 5.0? They have minor releases in between.
Yeah, that's why I also think that releasing version 4 and then version 5 is a little too much.
Yes, I think they are trying to follow the trend of the browsers, that they release one Chrome version every month.
Yeah, that's why you have now 42, 43 version. I don't know which Chrome version.
I think that the version numbers start losing meaning with this approach,
and 46. Well,
yeah. Oh, we are in Node 47. What does it does it fly?
It's way too much.
It's even hard for us to look at these changes and highlight any, because we see lots of fixes and breaking changes. Well, do you use Node.js regularly? No.
Yeah, in my current job, I basically call the Node.js.
So, what version are you using?
Currently, I think we are on some old 1.12 version, but due to some changes to Ubuntu 15.10, we need to move at least to Node.js 4. So, we are now in process of testing.
Oh, so you are seeing... dealing with the changes.
Yeah.
I don't envy you, because that's a pain.
It's
your code was working before. Why is it not working now?
Yeah, it's mostly actually not actual Node.js changes, while rather updating dependencies that would use the newest Node.js version, but those dependencies can change their APIs and so on and so on. So.
That's the trouble of depending so much on external libraries.
Yeah.
You cannot, you have to follow the updates, or else you lose something. And if you follow the updates, well, you also spend a lot of time. So it's a sort of a pain, I think. Well, my opinion, I don't know how you are dealing with it. It's part of a job, right? Okay, now we are going to comment about the Innovation Award winner, specifically the nominees of August that were nominated in September for voting, and then in October the results come out. So we'll start about JS class nominees. Arthur, which ones would you like to comment?
Yeah, the first one I would want to comment is jQuery type by letter. Class was created by Jackson Norton from United States, and basically it's a jQuery plugin where you provide the string and it could provide a type like effect. So I think there was the demo also here. Probably need to refresh the page only for you to see it. Yeah, as you see, here is the effect.
Oh, yeah.
You can probably also submit something. So that's what the component do. It's some simple, great effect that you could use in your website.
And, yeah, it's a simple but a nice effect.
Yeah. And Jackson got one book of choice by PACT for this package. And the next thing I wanted to comment is my own package that I created. It's a Country Web SDK. Basically, it's a browser SDK for a Country Analytics Server, the company I'm working for, and basically WebSDK is one of my projects that I'm managing, and I also decided to submit it to JS classes because, well, why not? It could get more exposure, more users, so why not? And yeah, if you're using Countly for mobile devices, now we also support web analytics through this SDK.
Yeah, that's useful to know. Well, on my behalf, I also would like to comment about one package. Let me share the screen here. And specifically, this package is called HTML5 Circle Audio Player, which is making audio players, but with a different shape and form of usage. This package is by Arish Chauhan from India, and oh, it's a shame that it does not provide a demo, so I could show you nor screenshots. But basically, it shows audio players that appear to be round, and you can control the volume. I think it's the volume or it's the position, I'm not sure. In a ring of the circle. So this is an interesting, different way to present audio players. Now, let's see how the Innovation Award rankings are in terms of the year 2015. Well, for the Innovation Award ranking of JavaScript, the positions are more or less the same. They have changed very little. But let's take a look at how all the standings are. First, Anders Toth with 6 packets and 23 points. Suresh Kumar from India with 4 packets and 13 points. Then followed with Jackson Knowlton with two packages and 9 points. Then Diego Lana Monica from Italy with 2 packages and 8 points. And Stephen Chapman in the same position with 2 packages and 8 points. Then comes Arthur Sossins that is catching up with 3 packages and 8 points. Then Dusan Boskic with 2 packages is in 7 points, and then tied with him in Gianluca Ferrari with 1 package and 7 points. Then Franz Josef Brunner from Austria with 2 packages and 6 points, and Everton Rosa tied with 1 package and 6 points. And 4 countries, it's almost the same order, but not exactly. I mean order of authors and countries. First, Hungary with 6 packages and 23 points. Then India, 6 packages and 20 points, followed by United States, 3 packages and 10 points. Then France, 3 packages and 10 points. Italy, 2 packages is and 8 points. And then Australia and Latvia also tied with 8 points. Then Serbia and Netherlands with 7 points. And finally, Austria with 6 points. Well, for the JavaScript Innovation Award, that's it. Okay, great. Well, with this, we practically ended this podcast. I'd like to thank you again, Arthur, for coming. And as we can see, there is always plenty of new topics about JavaScript and new things that are going on. So on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.